Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, your host of the program today. Gary Baker has sailed off into the sunset, and we've got a good crew in studio here at that in Caston. We're going to bring you some information about maybe eye-opening about gaming. It's not only a big sport out there, but it's even gotten into the classroom. We'll be talking about that coming up in just a minute on the Internet Advisor. Any of you guys remember the tune Games People Play Now? Remember that one? What was that from, the 80s? Or when was that?
Must have been 70s.
I think it must have been 70s. Yeah, it was way back.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah. Games People Play. Well, that could be the title for our program today, because we're going to be talking about gaming from a couple of different perspectives. And just a little bit, we'll be talking with an associate, assistant professor at Lawrence Technological University, who has got a course on it. You know, that might sound like underwater basket weaving, but I tell you, when you take a look at the gaming industry and what it is pulling in, it's a multi-billion dollar. That shocked me when I found it. Multi-billion dollar industry.
Well, you know, who are the first people to get phones? The techs. Who's the first people to get smartphones and, you know, the techs? What do most techs have in common? They're ADD. So they're going to be downloading all sorts of games.
Wait, what were you saying?
Squirrel.
Squirrel, yeah. I mean, I cannot tell you the number of people that I work with that it's very even hard to strike up a conversation with them, because when they're not working and they're walking, or even if they're in the bathroom, they have their phones out and they're playing some of these games.
It's amazing, yeah.
Because they... It's a complete distraction.
It's going to become, I think, even more intense, I predict, with AR and VR, you know, the augmented reality where it kind of lays over. Like the, what was that game that the kids were playing?
The Pokemon?
Pokemon.
Yeah.
They're like Pokemon. Even I got into that just to see what it was like with AR, the augmented reality, you know, where it's laid on top of the reality you're seeing. But in addition to that now, VR, the virtual reality, the headsets are getting more and more refined. I think there is, matter of fact, isn't there one out there that's mobile, completely mobile? You don't need to have it, you know, attached to a backpack or something like that.
Right. Yeah, it's actually a cardboard add-on with a Google phone.
That's right. Matter of fact, a couple of my grandchildren got that for Christmas, now that you're mentioning it. So when you see that happening, the whole gaming business is just going to be taking a huge chunk of time.
I'm stepping back from that. Really, I am. I mean, I do a lot of other time wasters. I just don't want to, you know, not yet. Not for me. I'll let someone else ruin their
What
eyes.
Kind of games were you into when you were?
I just lost it. I just have no interest in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know?
I do solitaire. Minesweeper.
Yeah, those way too much. Way too much.
That was my league. But I know that there, especially a lot of senior citizens listen to this program, and a lot of them are into games, you know, especially the ones that you can get. Doesn't Google has a page, I think, right on the homepage there, for Google, I think, where you can grab, you know, like the bubble popper.
Mm-hmm. And
it's also a lot of conversations revolve around the newest games. So people at work with, I feel left out because they have all these games and they're talking about levels and what characters they've won. And I'm like, and this is a 40 and 50 year old people. And it sounds like it's they're amazing. In high school. It really does.
Well, they are. They just never left.
And they're being paid for it.
Ouch. Sorry. Well, I see on the homepage for Google, you can get into like Entanglement Web. That was a game, I think. Yeah. Pop It. That's the one where you pop bubbles.
Right. That's addictive.
And I could see this for, our older listening audience, too, who have a lot of time on their hands and just want to be occupied. Remember when the Wii came out? It got people moving. It got them interacting with other people. You know, it was just a wonderful thing. And these games also do that as well. I just spend so much time driving and working to... I'm done. I just want to shut off.
I hear you.
I guess I'm burned out from it.
Exactly. I can't, because I spend so much time with our podcast and things like that and editing.
Well, you know,
the notion of relaxing on a screen is like, huh?
Well, for me, I think it's more like the AA program. I know that I'm addicted to it, and I don't want to form another addiction.
No, that's a good point.
You know what? I will be drawn in to a point where I will not come back.
You know, we could talk about this, but I'm trying to hook up some folks for a show coming up. There was a group called the Center for Humane Technology, and they had a campaign called The Truth About Tech. It was a group of executives who were both investors in technology and former Google and Facebook people who got out and said, this is bad. What we're doing behind the scenes at these places is we are actually designing systems to addict us.
Really?
They came out and admit that.
At some level, I knew it.
You know, Sean Parker was one of the early investors in Facebook.
That's right.
And back in November, he went public with a confession that he, and even after he left Facebook, were knowledgeably and actively finding addictive methods to do it.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, there, matter of fact, they did an interview that was on, I think, CBS, which is really informative to watch because they talk about that. And it's kind of scary when you think that these are the guys, as you said, who were people behind the scenes way back when, and it's gotten much more sophisticated right now.
Well, my son's a programmer for Western Digital. You know, they make the disk drives for most of the computers use.
Right.
We got into a conversation on the drive down, coming down before the show last week, and in high school, he was actually making $50, $75 a week programming extensions and tools. And I can come back to this.
I've been deep into
gaming and programming for gaming.
Good. We're going to talk about, because that's where we're going to talk about the deep end of gaming in just a moment with our first guest, who is a professor at Lawrence Technological University. We'll be back with that in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor. So please do stay tuned. Thank you for joining us on the Internet Advisor today. We're going to be focusing on games this first hour. I hope you'll hang on for this because it's not trivial at all. It's a very powerful segment, I think, you're going to find as we go on, because gamification, if you will, is a bigger theme that's going on here besides simply games. Well, we've got somebody who is very much involved in the whole area of games, and that is our first guest who is here, and that is none other than Marshall Ashton, who is an assistant professor and the director of game art at Lawrence Technological University. Mars, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, I was delighted to find out about this. A colleague of ours, Mike Brennan, had you on his M-Square TechCast show, and I found out about it. I thought, this looks really interesting. Find out more about this. Now, tell us a little bit. Your background is that you're a teacher, but you're also involved in the bigger game development or game community, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. So I've been teaching for a little over 10 years, but on the side, I've been doing a lot of independent game development, you know, which, so I'm not working for any of the larger companies. You know, the projects that I'm working on are typically small scale, may even be experimental and not really for profit. Just kind of in the realm of, okay, you know, games are a medium and how can I push it? How can I, you know, explore its capabilities and the like? So, in addition to that, I've been doing a lot of community development, and in the last year we got the International Game Developers Association, situated for, it's IGDA Ann Arbor. But it encompasses Detroit. It encompasses even elements of Grand Rapids, Lansing, and everything in between.
How is that connected to the community development? Oh, you mean the development of a community of gamers? I got you. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. All right. Let's step back for just a little bit and just talk about the whole concept of gaming and what it is, because that we were kind of kibitzing in the studio here about what games we played, or, and we have a lot of seniors who listen who love games, you know, whether it's Pop It on Google, you know, or, you know, something like Minesweeper or things like that. You know, some of the really ones that have been out there a long time.
Or Words. What was the one, Words with Friends?
Oh, Words with Friends, you know, which is at least a communal kind of a thing, which is kind of cool. What kind of games have you been playing, Kasten?
Oh, I don't play games.
Nope.
Well, I do, but I can't admit it to my wife.
But gaming, you know, I think people have a kind of a sense of that it's peripheral, that it's no big deal. But I got my mind blown the other day when we were talking with one of our tech experts here, Shane Hamlin, who was very much into gaming. He said, "This is a multi-billion-dollar business." And I said, "What? Playing games?"
Well, I mean, playing games is the multi-billion, but did, now Shane's talking about playing the games, right? Like there are tournaments. Is that what he's referring to?
Well,
or is he talking about the development?
Well, among
the
other
sales,
things, I think. Well, and I think the sales as well. Are we right about that, Marsh?
Yeah, I mean, it's really on both fronts. So, you know, not only, you know, consumers buying games, but with certain services like Twitch and YouTube, where, you know, somebody could, if they have the community watching and supporting them, they could be making a living just playing games and having these spectators watching them play.
For the sake of our audience, describe what Twitch is. This fascinates me.
So Twitch is this platform where people can pretty much broadcast what they are playing. They can broadcast themselves. So it's not strictly just people, you know, playing games, and it functions like a chat room where you watch them and you can, you know, send them messages and the like. But there are also people on there who kind of broadcast them just participating in a variety of activities. And this has bled over into YouTube as well. So YouTube offers very similar services.
Okay.
Right. Now, you know, I've also seen a cable channel on, is it Friday nights or Saturdays, up by me in Ortonville, where they actually broadcast tournaments. I think it's FX or TSX or something like that, and they and it's gaming. I mean, it's on from like 8 o'clock until 11 o'clock.
Well, Leo Laporte started out with Twitch on one of those game channels, I think, didn't he?
No, this is people actually playing tournaments live, and they're playing gaming, and it's on our local. It's being locally syndicated, or not locally syndicated, but it's broadcast.
So, Mars, let's step then into your world as a university professor. What are the kind of things that you're teaching your students there, and how are they involved in games?
Most of what we're doing is very project-based. So, you know, we have both game art students who are doing art and animation, and then we also have the computer science side, game software development, who's doing all of the coding side, right? They're working with code, they're dealing with math, they're, you know, kind of pulling everything together. And these students are coming together in almost every course to just make games. And very much like the work that I do, you know, they don't necessarily have to be, you know, for profit. They could be, you know, small kind of simple games or games of much bigger scope where, you know, you're in a fully immersed in a world, and you know they're trying to tell you this big grand story,
right? Wow. Which most students are you know they have this, you know, when they go in there and they're so enthused, they want to tell a huge story, and you got to rake them in and let's start small or whatever.
And
then you also have the people that develop the game stories as well. You know, the storylines you know, as well as the not only the arts and the programming, but you also have the storylines, which is another facet.
The writers, yeah.
And the writers.
Like, well, your son, you were saying during the breakcast, that was a coder.
Well, he's
in high school, he was doing it.
He's a coder now, working for Western Digital, but in high school, he was making $50, $75 a week building scripts and doing add-ons for a gaming program called RuneScape. And that really launched him into the whole concept of collaborative computing, collaborative programming, and getting into some of the shared resources that are out there specifically for programmers.
Wow.
Now he's making six figures shortly out of college. So
he'll take care of you, great. Dad. Someday he'll take care of you.
Wow.
I just want a nice home.
Well, you know, I always told him when he accused me of being mean, I'd say, you know, I got to do what's right because one day you're going to be changing my diaper.
So, Mars, what particular aspect of this is your métier, your strong point?
Mainly the design point. I've been doing a lot of direction and management as well, really just keeping the teams on point and making sure that they are prioritizing their time. Because it really, 16 weeks, which is you know our typical course length, is not a lot of time.
No.
To make, you know, even a game prototype, you know, like kind of a rough idea, something playable. And there are so many different facets to it. You know, you mentioned the writing in addition to, you know, art and code. But, I mean, they also have to market themselves. And,
Wow, there's so much that comes into it. That's interesting. Gaming ties so much of that together. I'm curious, is LTU, Lawrence Technological University, are they fairly, is this a new kind of approach? Are they breaking ground with this compared to other groups, other universities that are around, or is this something that's already had a good head of steam?
It's definitely something that's, you have a couple of pockets, like University of Utah, University of Southern California, DigiPen, Savannah College of Art and Design, you know, who have these programs that are very, very well known, at least in this region, you know, everything from U of M to State to Kendall or CCS, they offer these types of classes or, you know, even like minors or graduate programs that focus on this kind of content. But where Lawrence Tech kind of differs itself is the very design and project focused approach.
Okay.
Where, you know, many of the courses that I've designed or teach or, you know, that I've had my colleagues come in and teach for us, they're all about making games.
Mars,
Hang
on a second. We're going to take a quick pause. We come back, we'll continue our conversation. Let me once again introduce our guest who's on the air with us right now. His name is Mars or Marshall Ashton. He is an assistant professor and director of game art at Lawrence Technological University. And we've been talking with him about the broad field of gaming. So many different disciplines are involved in this, Mars. You have kids coming to you, I imagine, from many different aspects. You've got artists, you've got coders, you've got a whole bunch of. How do you get them all to work together?
Very carefully. You got to find the right group, the right personalities that really, you know, mingle very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the group that's going to like hang out beyond the scope of the project and kind of become friends, because then they want to hang out. They want to work on this stuff together. That's really all it takes.
All it takes. You found that in 10 years. Wow.
So another thing is when the kids graduate, or, you know, are they going for a bachelor's of science or computer engineering? I mean, what type of degrees do you see coming out?
So the art side has a BFA, and then the computer science side has a bachelor of science.
Excellent.
Okay. So that's a BSA would be the bachelor. Help me.
Bachelor of Fine Arts.
Fine Arts. That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah, and fully accredited too. Which
right.
Is,
yeah, and by the way, it's no longer, don't look down your nose, folks, at this Bachelor of Fine Arts, because these kids are, I have a dear friend of mine, Nicholas Cole, who is a graphic artist out on the East Coast, and got his degree at one of the schools out there, a very big design school in Rhode Island. The point is, he is doing incredible work with Disney and many other places, both, in animation and, his artwork is astounding. So these are degrees now. It used to be this was the kind of thing that, people who didn't know what they wanted to do with their lives went out and got the fine arts degrees. Ain't necessarily so anymore, is it, Mars?
No, not at all. I mean, our students are working with, the largest car companies around, and, they're working with the state of Michigan on lotto games. I mean, I've even had alum that have worked on feature films, both, on the production level and, on the art side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild how, you can go to school for games, but you end up in film and visual effects and, right. All of these other, multi-billion dollar industries.
Well, you mentioned cars, the auto industry.
Yeah. And for me, I tried to guide my son. He started out wanting to be a games programmer. I looked at it from a parental standpoint of making the world a better place and, being workable so that you're, in effect, not obsoleting yourself. And so I got very familiar with and, working with the advanced technologies I do, the idea of gamification. When you think about what's a game,
yeah,
we're flying safer because of a computer game, a flight simulator. And so a flight simulator is, if you put the gamification to keep people's interest, a lot of people have become pilots very quickly because they played with the Microsoft Flight Simulator even back in the Microsoft DOS days.
Oh, yeah.
So that whole idea of being able to use games to help nurses understand the way that an infusion pump works, a very complex piece of equipment in a factory, to use that simulation and gaming, and now with augmented reality or virtual reality, gaming is really going, you can use it for relationship development to help people play games for how to develop interpersonal skills. So the idea of gaming and where it's going into the future is really, really an exciting field.
Yeah. Mars, go ahead, Mars. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's funny you mentioned nursing and gaming. Lawrence Tech is starting up a nursing program, and that's one of my first plans is integrating with some of their curriculum and trying to figure out how we can assist them.
There you go. I'm glad I gave you that idea.
Well, that's fascinating, too. How are you seeing it? I kind of pulled out of the air AI, augmented reality, or AR, pardon me, augmented reality and VR, virtual reality as two of the big things that are now going to be moving into the mobile world more and more. Talk to me about how you see that coming into gaming and breaking out from, people sitting at home at a computer to being on mobile devices.
Well, a lot of it boils down to the hardware. I mean, we've been working with the HoloLens with Microsoft.
Oh, yes.
And, really just developing applications and, again, kind of working this experimental realm. And, as these devices get, more and more consumer-friendly, we're already seeing these devices hit, living rooms and, mm-hmm. and people are using these what used to be very expensive and very inaccessible equipment. Now they're just using it freely like it's like a TV.
Yeah, yeah. And huge. When the HoloLens first came out, I was fascinated to see what they could do with it. But it had to be within a certain restricted area with the, the lights and the cameras on. It was all, and then you had a ton of equipment around with you for it. And that is now all being distilled down to much, much smaller kind of models.
Yeah, and a couple of weeks ago, we had Jason Vazzaro on Vectorform, and he was talking about the really advanced surgery and automobile design that they're doing with the HoloLens.
Absolutely, yeah. I was seeing a case in, I think it was the in Sweden or in another, anywhere, somewhere in that Nordic area, where they were using AR, the augmented reality, to practice surgeries so that they would know what the... And then on one of the TV series, The Good Doctor, they played that out with them using it. It was just fascinating anyway. How much work have you done with that kind of thing, Mars?
Well, a lot of it's just been kind of experimental. I mean, we have students who work in Unity all of the time, and that's exactly what HoloLens needs or uses to build its spaces. So I know that we had students, so you guys are talking about all of these world-changing things, and some of the students were working on a project where you were playing hide-and-seek with a squirrel.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, squirrel. It would run and hide, and you know, the HoloLens can tell the environment around you, so it would hide behind desks and chairs, and you know, you'd be able to go and find it, and then it would run away again. And
I'll be darned. Fascinating. And then, would you get behind that technology then to just find out what was going on, or were you just using the HoloLens as an instrument?
Really, it's you know, it's this instrument. It's like our, you know, our device that we're using, you know, as output. what's wild is that many of the tools that are used for these types of pieces of equipment, they're all grounded in the same kind of technical skills, you know, that we would teach or that we use for, you know, a variety of things. So,
yeah.
You know, I mentioned going out into film and the like. Well, this could very much bleed into, you know, the VR and augmented reality realm as well.
Yeah, right. I have, maybe it's a false image, but I have an image of artists as kind of loners, as individuals, you know, who are crafting their art, et cetera, and don't interact too well with others. But you seem to have set a, you know, a program up and a goal of actually getting these, you know, rather individualistic people into community, into groups.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we have a lot of people who are, you know, they're alone, they're in the room, middle of the night, and they're trying to nail down this painting, this illustration, or whatever. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, it doesn't really mean a whole lot if it's not out in the world, if it's not shared,
yeah.
If they don't get feedback from other people.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
You know, I've done everything I can, and I've had a lot of really great people to help support this kind of congregation of people to...
Yeah,
facilitate these needs.
When I go to a party, Foster, the most interesting and the most popular people at the party are the artists. So I don't know which artist you're hanging out with. But a lot of them are really social animals.
All right. I stand corrected on that. But it's interesting that what Mars you're talking about is bringing these people all together in teams. And as a matter of fact, you talk about the community that you created. We've only got about a minute to go here. What are the prerequisites for getting into your programs at Lawrence Technological University?
Well, there is like a base GPA requirement, but we recently removed our portfolio requirement, namely because, you know, we're bringing in artists that will flourish. And I think that they're going to flourish and grow more, you know, in the first year of interacting with these other artists and their peers and in the curriculum. So a lot of it is just, if you're interested and, you know, you have the capability, you want to get into these fields, come join us.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Mars Marshall Ashton, who is an assistant professor and director of game art at Lawrence Technological University. Best to you and much success in your work with these young people. It's an incredible field you're in, and it's blossoming even as we speak. Thanks so much for being with us, Mars.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Back in just a moment with Mr. Mike Brennan and MI Tech News. And we've arrived at that time of the program where each week we put you in touch with Mr. Mike Brennan and MI Tech News, which is a service that he provides to keep you in touch with what's going on in technology and entrepreneurship throughout the state of Michigan. Mike, welcome to the show again.
Thanks, Foster. I'm a lot colder this week than I was last.
Ah, yes. Last week he was aboard the good ship Shared Adventure with Mr. Baker, who unfortunately...
I thought it was called the good ship Lollipop.
No, it's another one. Yeah, apparently he is off and about the Caribbean right now and could not be with us today, unfortunately.
Hard life.
Yeah, I tell you, tough life out there. Works all week at his job as a consultant for IT and then hops aboard the hoop for weekends. And I tell you, that makes for a great combination for him, I guess, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. That's not a little boat, 47 feet long and 25 feet wide.
Right. That's sunset. Sunset on the poop deck.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to ask him just to move the blenders out of the out of, because they was interfering with the phones last week. Something fierce.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. Let's talk about what do we do is introduce people to some of the headlines that they might find in their news. By the way, twice a week you get the MI Tech News delivered to you on Wednesdays and Fridays. And it has lots of mixed media in it now, in the sense that you get connections to audio like our show and IT and the D, along with M Squared TechCast. And then you've also got a lot of video there, Mike. I think there were three pieces of video this week, weren't there?
Two. Okay. But we always have stuff on the homepage, and I'm so backed up editing video, there's no problem there. There'll be lots of videos.
That's good. That's excellent. Of course, he's chief cook and bottle washer, which I can relate to with the program.
Yeah.
And you're doing everything, so it's looking really, really good. Okay, well, let's talk about a few of the headlines here to give people an idea of what they can, you know, get when they subscribe. And by the way, cost absolutely nothing. We'll tell you a little bit more about that in just a moment. First headline that caught my eye there was cybersecurity's greatest concern, and casted probably relates to this, top priority for national security agencies.
Yeah, more so than anything else. They had this week, they had a meeting in D.C. where they did the national assessment, the worldwide threats hearing. And CIA, NSA, FBI, Senate Intelligence Committees, everybody all said that cybersecurity was number one, way ahead of terrorist attack or nuclear strikes or anything like that. Because the whole country is so wired in now that if the bad guys get in, they can just raise havoc, right?
Yeah.
So that's their biggest concern.
They don't have to throw a bomb. They don't have to, you know, shoot a bullet and put themselves in danger of getting hit by one themselves. They can simply poison the system.
All they have to do is, you know, mess around with Wall Street and the stock market. And
Exactly. Or some of the major...
That'll just unsettle the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
yeah,
the water supply or the electrical grid. I mean, it's potentially vulnerable.
Yep, exactly. Far, far bigger concern nowadays. Another one I saw there, probably on the good news side, was advanced manufacturing jobs in Michigan are up for the 8th year, which is nice to hear.
Yeah, that's lightweighting innovations for tomorrow and Workforce Intelligence Network of Southeast Michigan came up with these reports. And it's the heavy, you know, CNC kinds of stuff and different things like that. But it's also maintenance and repair workers, laborers and freight, stock and material handlers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, and even production workers. But they're flourishing. They added another 27,000 online job postings from the last time they took this survey. Now, the problem is filling those jobs.
Yes.
There's never a shortage of online openings. I mean, if you have these skills, you have your pick of probably 10 jobs, you know?
Yeah.
So it's getting enough and training enough and keeping enough people in the state to fill these jobs. That's really the big issue.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this last one will be good news, I guess, for beer drinkers out there, and it's how craft beer and technology are transforming the distribution business.
Yeah, absolutely. This is from one of the folks that was on my show, Rutherford Associates, who does the EOSTAR root accounting software. So it's maintenance and warehousing and all that. But what it boils down to is there's so many craft beers that distributors, there's like thousands of them now, that the distributors are just overwhelmed. So they're bringing in AI into these big data databases just like everybody else is. And so they're enabling beer distributors, as one example, to use AI to more easily and more flexibly handle their inventory. Because beer, you know, has a shelf life.
Sure.
If you pick the wrong thing and it stays in stock too long, it turns kind of skunky.
Yep.
Or on the flip side, if you don't have enough of something, you lose in sales. So AI is coming to the warehouse.
That's interesting. I know that in the city, I live in Royal Oak, and Ed, you're familiar with that. There are, it just seems that they're flourishing like bunny rabbits in the dark. They're popping up, all these craft beer businesses are popping up all over the place.
Yeah, there's two new craft beer businesses opening every day.
Every day?
Every day.
Wow.
And you wonder where they come up with the flavors and the ingredients. How do they differentiate? I mean...
Well, that's the big deal. And I think, you know, some of this I think will probably shake out as we go on.
Well,
but,
if I remember correctly, we had a guest on a little while ago, and he was talking about not only how... up in Traverse City, how that's so much wine country over there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's no coincidence that it happens to be the same parallel as northern France where for the wine industry.
Yeah.
But also hops in Michigan are very big.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah.
So
I tried to talk a friend of mine that had 15 acres in Owego County into growing hops, but because they can't keep up with it. I mean, it's like it's turned into gold almost. It's just real expensive.
Wow. Wow. It's neat to hear. You mentioned Owego County. A lot of these counties, especially in central Michigan, have been starved. You know, their economies have been crashed, and, you know, they're looking for something, and that'd be great.
I only have 10 acres, but that sounds fun.
Yeah, so what they're saying, I was reading up on it, actually, and they're saying you needed a minimum of about 20 acres, and the setup is really, really expensive, but the payoff is tremendous. Those hops plants go 20 feet tall. They're 3 feet across.
Wow.
But it takes a couple years. You have to be prepared. Yeah. It takes a couple years for it to really pay off, but when it does, yeah, you know, so...
Remember, I saw that Super Bowl commercial of Budweiser saying that they... moved the beer into producing water, and I thought, gee, what'd they do, just change the label in the can?
That's the truth.
Well, Mike, let's tell people how they can get hold of MI Tech News and not only these headlines, but much, much more information.
Well, just surf on over to www.mitechnews.com or certainly go to your homepage. You've got a link there. You sign up for the newsletters, or you just want to check it out whenever you want, then just do that. But we have video, we have audio, we have stories, and now we have an event coming up in April that many of you, my compadres there at the Internet Advisor, will be participating.
That's right.
In.
Right.
So IoT Tech Connect. I mean, everybody's wondering, what the heck is Internet of Things? Well, we're going to tell you, and we're going to have a lot of Michigan players there telling you on panels and companies there that will be displaying their wares, particularly in VR, AR. We're trying to set up a VR, AR workshop so you can try the gear on.
Wow.
Tanya Matthews is putting together a STEM education workshop addressing that skills issue I mentioned earlier.
Right.
We're going to have a bunch of high school kids there in a workshop doing that to get them turned on to STEM so that they'll go into these careers. I think we got it all covered.
Yeah, that's coming up in April. Am I right?
April 4th, Troy Marriott. Yeah, April IoT 4th. Tech Connect. That's the URL, too.
So. And you'll find, by the way, information on that on our homepage as well. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. Have a great weekend, and we will see you back here next week.
Thanks. Look forward to it, Foster. Thank you.
Thank you. Ask Mr. Mike Brennan. Coming up, we're going to continue our talking about games, only this time we're talking with one of the executives from Comcast about the incredible coverage they have with the Olympic Games, the Winter Olympic Games going on right now in South Korea. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up starting the second hour. Also have our Tech Roundtable. That's hour number two of the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and at Detroit's newest podcast network, podcastdetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Mr. Gary Baker. Ed Riddell and Kasten Thomas are in studio with me today. And in the second hour, we're going to start off by talking with an executive from Comcast about the incredible coverage they have of the Olympics that are going on right now. Want to find out more about that? How you can see your favorite sport being played? Then stay tuned this hour. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to find out all that you need to know about that as we go on. Well, unless you've been living in an ice cave someplace and without any connection to the outside world, you would know that the Winter Olympics are going on right now. And the Comcast Xfinity cable system is doing an excellent job of presenting access to that. With us right now, we have Vito Forlenza, who is Executive Director of TVE Content and Product Strategy at Comcast Cable. And Vito, thank you so much for joining us here on the weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you with us. And boy, it's been quite an event going on. I've been, of course, entranced by the skating and some of the downhill skiing. It's just extraordinary to watch. Well, what parts of this have been your favorites?
I've really been into the snowboarding, the slopestyle. Got it started with when Red Gerard won the gold medal. I've just got into snowboarding all of a sudden and been watching it ever since.
You know, it's a fairly new sport to Olympics, I believe. And
That's correct. Yeah, and actually next week they have a new snowboarding event. It's called Snowboard Big Air, where they go off these really steep ramps and do all these tricks in the air. I believe that starts on Monday. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. It's actually taken from a skateboarding type of event, and now it's on snowboarding, and it's the first time in the Olympics. So I'm really excited to watch it. And actually, on our platforms, we have coverage of the Olympics for the first time in 4K high dynamic range, so 4K HDR.
Wow.
And it's a select number of events, and Snowboard Big Air is actually going to be one of them customers will be able to watch.
Wow. Now, tell me a little bit about that for people who may not be familiar with 4K UHD. What that ultra-high definition, what does that mean?
Right. So 4K, it's 4,000 times the pixels of standard definition. So it's ultra-high definition. And along with offering ultra-high definition, we're offering high dynamic range, which really brings out the color in your 4K TV so you can see it. And we actually also are serving that content with Dolby Atmos sound. So it's three-dimensional sound, very immersive experience for those customers who have a 4K HDR television and also may have a Atmos sound in their homes.
Oh, man, that would tune up the home theater. Oh, my goodness.
That's right. You can wake up the neighbors.
Now, let's clarify things for people. These services we're talking about are available for Comcast customers, right?
That's correct. Comcast X1 customers. So X1 is our new entertainment platform. And about 60% of our customers have X1 right now.
Okay.
And on that platform, it's an internet-connected device. So we've been able to blend traditional television with the power of the internet. So we've actually taken the NBC Sports app that is covering every minute of the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
That's meant for phones and tablets and computers. And we've actually integrated that into X1. So now you can watch every minute of the Olympics on X1, and you can watch it from one of the five NBC networks that are broadcasting the games and traditional television, mm-hmm. or you can stream it over the internet, that bonus content that we've added by incorporating NBC's app into the platform. So if you want to watch any minute of the 2,400 hours of coverage that NBC has available, we got you covered on X1. You can also take it with you in the palm of your hand on the go. So you can we have it in our Xfinity Stream app as well. So every minute of the Olympics live. And if you miss anything, we have every minute of the Olympics on demand. So if you maybe miss snowboarding or something else, you could catch up either on TV or like I said, with your phone, when you're on the go.
Vito, I did that the other night. As a matter of fact, because snowboarding or something is fairly new to me, and I watched I forget who the young man was. A young woman who was performing. It was just astounding to see what they can do. The acrobatics are incredible.
That's right. Maybe you were watching Chloe Kim. She was the young U.S. teenager that won the gold medal. Yeah, she was fantastic. Also, the U.S. was really doing very well in snowboarding, and they've been having good Olympics so far. So this is the middle weekend, as they say, of the games, and we're working hard to bring everything to our customers. If anything is interested in them, we're trying to serve it up to them the best we can.
Yeah, and boy, and you have in so many different kinds of, there are so many ways, as you pointed out, of watching the Olympics and catching the excitement of it. And again, this is an experience on X1. Now, explain what X1 is to our listeners who may not be familiar with it.
Sure. X1 is sort of a next-generation entertainment operating system where we use the power of the internet to sort of create a full entertainment experience for you in your living room. So because it's connected to the internet, obviously we serve up traditional television, but we're able to have apps on there. So we have, I mentioned the NBC Sports app, but we also have Netflix and YouTube.
Yes.
So for example, if you want to watch a movie on Netflix, you can go ahead and do that right on X1. You don't have to worry about finding another device or switching inputs on your TV or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
It's all on X1, just with the tap of the remote. You're into Netflix or YouTube. If you want to see that trending video that everybody's talking about, we have every YouTube's full library categorized on X1. So it's a great way. It's a great to experience television and entertainment in your home. And for the Olympics, what we've done is we've tried to use the flexibility of X1. To try something new. So what we did this year is we're offering 50 channels available for our customers to watch every minute of the Olympics.
Yeah.
So it's all on-demand content.
Yeah.
And we have it at every single sport. There's 15 sports. Every single sport has its own channel. Some of the top athletes have their own channels. We've even created some like Steam channels. So if you want to see some wildest crashes, we have them all together for you on one channel.
Oh, or goodness.
Gold medal moments. Everything is there for our customers. So it's brand new this year. We've never done it before, so we're experimenting a little bit with it.
Hey,
and our editors now, they have these new tools that allow us to do that.
Yeah, we're coming up to a break here. I'm going to have you hang around. We're going to talk a little bit more about this because it's fascinating. Vito Forlenza from Comcast with us. We'll come back to talking more about this in just a moment.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Internet Advisor, and we've been focusing on gaming today on the show in our first hour, and also now we're talking about gaming as well with the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, that are going on as we speak. And we have with us as our guest Vito Forlenza. He is the executive director of TVE content and product strategy at Comcast Cable, and they have incredible coverage of the Winter Olympics through their X1 platform that we've been talking about. Cassin, you had something you wanted to ask him about, I think.
Yeah, Vito, I saw an announcement, I think, yesterday that the ratings for NBC on this are down considerably. And my first thought was, wow, with this Comcast platform, as amazing as it is that having an impact on their ratings? And so, you know, this idea of television of the future, what you guys have done with these, I thought it was 30 channels, but 50 channels.
50
man,
channels.
It's just, it's overwhelming and really great for navigation. I'm just excited to see where this platform's going to go into the future, because it's just so versatile. I can see so many things for, you know, like the NFL Combine and other things that are coming up where this platform would be perfect for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, we started blending the content, this notion of taking traditional television and blending it with the power of the internet. First, the time we ever did it was in Rio, so that was about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And it was the first time what we did was we blended the traditional channels with the on-demand and the NBC Sports app. So we did that this time as well. But now we started to do two things that are different. One was that we started to pull data, sports data, into the experience. So we have a companion sports app on X1. It's called the sports app, quite frankly. And when you launch it, we give you all the scores, all the real-time highlights, the ability to tune your channel right from the sports app, and you can get more information about what you're watching without leaving the screen. And we also integrated new voice capabilities for these Olympics. We actually found that 50% of the traffic to our Olympics homepage on X1 is coming through the voice. So people are picking up the remote, and they're saying Olympics home or Pyeongchang 2018, and they're going right to our Olympics homepage. And the power of the voice, it's something that is new to us, and it's just that the customers love it. We have some fun features. For example, you can say, an athlete's name, like Sean White, and you'll get what we call a summary card of the events that he's in and the medals that he's won to date. You could also, if there's an event going on and maybe hockey's going on, you can say USA Men's Hockey, and you'll get a score of the game without leaving the event that you're watching. And we actually have a fun thing this year. So for figure skating, my wife and I have been using this a lot. We enjoy it. When they're skating, you can actually say to your remote, what song is playing? And we'll analyze that and then tell you what song that they're skating to.
It's like Shazam. So, Shazam.
Right. It's that type of technology where, we know it's very popular on mobile phones. So we said, hey, let's just put it on X1.
Wow.
And we were able to do that. So fun new ways to experience the Olympics with Xfinity and X1.
You know, Vito, it sounds like in many ways Comcast is using the Olympic experience as kind of experimental lab as well for future.
That's exactly right. We when we started doing the Olympics to this scale a few years ago, we said, this is such a big event, and we have so much content and so much capability and so much momentum around it. And so many eyeballs, why don't we try new things? And one of those things, like I mentioned earlier, was this 50 channels. We had never done that before, so we unveiled it last Friday night for the Olympics, and we're learning how the customers are interacting with it and trying to fine-tune it as we go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's right. It's a great, great opportunity for us because so many people are using the content to really learn about what people want and what's the best way to bring content to those customers.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like an experiment. So I find it funny that you're
well,
doing that
you.
Because it's really well implemented and
yes,
well thought out.
I agree 100%. I kind of waded into it. I say waded into it because of the amount of information there, and was delighted to find that, for instance, when I went to the guide, because I'm an X1 customer, I went to the guide and I was able to see the different panels with the different sports and things like that. I can see, however, why that you would use a lot of voice, because there is so much information there. So if I want to get to something, it could be a little daunting, and voice would be a perfect way to navigate through that.
Yeah, all you have to do when you just say Olympics home, people see me, how do I get to the Olympics content? And I start telling them all the different ways, and I say, wait a minute, just say Olympics home, and you're there. It takes you right to it.
Vito,
go
ahead.
Well, I really like to, if I've never heard of an athlete, or there's a new athlete, and I just say the athlete's name, and now I start to learn about them. It's super easy, and like I said, people love it.
That's excellent. How much of what we're seeing on the Olympic coverage is liable to continue on in some form with the channel itself?
We are already actually thinking about the World Cup offering this summer.
Oh,
and
yes.
So it's another huge sporting event, international sporting event.
Oh, yeah.
And we want to use the Olympics as to learn what's really resonated with customers and repeat those things. So we know already the customers, they the voice that I mentioned, but also they love the channels. You can just tell by how much video our customers are watching. They really enjoy that presentation of it. So we'll probably do something like that again. But we're already brainstorming ways, like what can we do maybe that we want to do for the Olympics and we weren't able to do? What are some new ideas that we can bring forth for the soccer tournaments? We're really excited about getting back to the drawing board a little bit, or for the World Cup, and taking what we've learned from the Olympics and fine-tuning it with new capabilities that mm-hmm. we want to unveil over mm-hmm. the summer for the World Cup.
Oh, the World Cup is going to be that is. We as Americans, I think, are kind of blinded to it because we don't understand the magnitude of football, spelled F-U-T.
Football.
Football or foot. You know, I am a huge fan of that. I've played it and love it. And there are billions of people around the world who are tuned into it everywhere. And it's going to be quite an event. But keeping up with all of the elimination rounds and all the players and things like that is going to be a real challenge. So my hat's off to you using that technology to go after it, Ed.
Well, you know, one of the questions I was thinking of is there's just so much content out there. Is there a way to DVR it or store it so I can go back and look at it? Because not so much for simultaneous events, but from other experiences.
Yeah, there's a few ways. You can DVR with, if you have your DVR, you can DVR it. Actually, you can watch. If you DVR'd anything, if you recorded anything, you can actually watch that when you're on the go. You could stream it to your phone, or you can just download it to your phone for offline viewing. All the video on demand coverage that we have available, again it's up to around 2,400 hours of coverage, will be available till the end of March. So you can enjoy the Olympics on our platforms for a while after the games end.
Wow, excellent.
And even in real time, let's say, for example, the primetime show starts tonight and you get home and maybe you come home an hour after it started, you can just pick up your voice remote and say, restart this program, and it will take you right to the beginning. So a lot of different ways to catch up for anything that you may have missed. So you don't have any excuses to miss any of the Olympics.
Vito Forlenza is our guest. He's the executive director of TVE Content and Product Strategy at Comcast. Speaking of strategies, I understand, or I had understood, I thought, that at the beginning of this year, the physical DVRs were going to be going away with Comcast, and we were going to be going to the cloud for our DVRs. Is that happening? Are we close to it?
Yes, that's happening in many areas. It's with X1, so mm-hmm. many of our X1 customers have a cloud DVR. That's actually how we are able to, as I mentioned, if you recorded something, not just for the Olympics, but any program, you'd be able to download it to your phone or stream it to your phone because it's stored in the cloud. So that is rolling out and continues to roll out for our customers.
All right. Vito, thank you so much for being with us. It's been fascinating. Both, and our hat's off to you for the coverage that you've got with X1 on the Olympics and the technology behind it. I think going forward, that's where I'm excited to see some of these things being applied to our viewing as well. As you said, with the World Cup coming up in soccer.
I'm sure Comcast will make it a goal.
They already got that guy on a commercial. Hey, Vito, thank you so much for being with us. Vito Forlenza, Executive Director, TV Content and Product Strategy, Comcast. Thanks for being with us here on the Internet Advisor.
Well, thank you so much, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. And my hat's off to Mr. Ed Riddell. Once again this week, he is performing sterling service. He is not only part of our tech roundtable here, he is also applying his skills as an engineer to our program and producing it. Thank you very much, Eddie.
I'm just watching the way that you caress the soundboard. It's amazing.
I don't think I've ever heard it.
Well, you know, I'm using the same fingers I use on my touchpad when I touch my laptop.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about the same thing.
Hopefully your laptop doesn't get jealous.
A little more tactile involved with this.
Hey, Cassie, you, as we were talking about the program and gaming and things like that, you were talking about, and it would stand to reason with a big target like this, that hackers are going to be going after the Olympics.
Yeah, big surprise.
Yeah. Duh.
North Korea, maybe?
Maybe.
Or the Russians who were excluded for the most part?
Yeah. That's true.
Yes, you're right.
Now, did any of the 27, how many? There were so many that said they could participate,
yes,
that there were no drugs found in the system, but I don't know if they were actually performing or not. I don't recall if any of them got to perform.
Yeah, I was thumping my chest with all my knowledge to my wife one night, and she goes, no, there are Russians on there. I'm like, no, Russia was denied, and they're classified as athletes from Russia.
So they did get a chance to participate.
They're allowing the individual athletes to participate, but it's not
right.
The responsibility or the giving credit to the country of Russia.
Yeah.
So what happens if they win, like, a medal? Are they on the platform then?
Sure, yeah.
Oh.
As individuals, they're on the platform.
Oh,
there's
good.
Just no, I guess what they're doing is they're removing the political advantage that Russia can stand up and thump their chest that we won.
Because I was noticing with the Winter Olympics, usually Russia did very well, you know, because obviously they have permanent winter climates in some places like Siberia, et cetera.
So what type of attacks have taken place? Cyber attacks? I mean, taking down...
Well, the big one was at the opening ceremonies. Yeah. There's some thought that the drone display was hacked.
Ooh.
Nobody has substantiated that, but what went on television was actually the rehearsal. You didn't see the live event.
Oh.
And that happened a couple years ago for one of the Super Bowls. They had to revert to a rehearsal film and interject that in.
You know, that sort of makes sense, but that really wouldn't be a hack. All you'd need to do is have something that broadcast a bunch of RF noise in the vicinity, and those things wouldn't work. Basically.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that's very quickly pinpointed and identified, and you could go after the perpetuators.
Yeah.
So that's probably impervious, and a lot of the drones are pre-programmed. So from what I've read, there were two companies that were hacked. One is the data center called Atos, who's providing data center services to the Olympic Committee, and then a company called CyberScoop that was providing on-site services. Apparently, both of those were hacked a couple of weeks in advance with malware, a lot of the same kinds of tools that hackers use to make ransomware were used. And also, apparently, either through that hacking or through other means, they got some of the passwords and credentials of some administrators of the system, and so they were able to spread the information or the hacking across a lot of the computers. So apparently the Wi-Fi network was affected. Some of the scores were affected. There weren't anything what I would call life-critical systems were affected. So that makes me think that this wasn't malicious as much as it was someone who wanted to make a point and punish the South Koreans or
makes
the
Olympic sound like
Committee.
North Korea, doesn't it?
Makes it sound like North Korea or Russia who would have some incentive to disrupt things and say, you know, see, we got you.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So that is fascinating. Yeah, because it's a huge target. But I guess in some ways, the fact that nothing's been brought down also talks about the security that they must have. Must have pretty decent security protecting them for this kind of an event.
Oh, sure. But, you know, they were hacked, and no security is 100%.
Yep.
I mean, there have even been hacks of computers that are air-gapped. The technical term is air-gapped from a network.
Wow.
There are techniques, because if you can get in there early, you might remove these devices from the network, but if they were infected weeks ago, or if one of the suppliers of the software was affected months ago, then those vulnerabilities and those security holes would be exploited before they were taken off the network.
It's interesting you mentioned the suppliers, because isn't that what happened with Target, that it was a supplier that got nailed? Target wasn't...
No, as I recall, the Target hack started with an asphalt contractor who had an account on a Target system, and by hacking that company, they were able to get into some basic levels of the Target network. And once you've got a little hole, then you just spread the virus, or you spread those hacking techniques to get to other systems.
Wow. So, but that's kind of mind-boggling to think that you're not only protecting yourself from an immediate attack, but it could have been months before somebody planned this thing and began, as you said, creeping into the system.
Yeah, you just plan a time bomb that says, okay, make everything stop working or destroy the systems starting 10 minutes before the schedule for the Olympics to start.
Whoa.
And that creates havoc.
Wow. And, you know, we were talking offline about this. Creating havoc is really the objective, isn't it?
A lot of times, yeah. There's always an end game that a hacker has. It may be monetary, it may be destructive, it may be creating havoc, it may be creating uncertainty. my concern about really bad ransomware wouldn't be we're going to destroy your data. It's we're going to change your data, but not tell you what it changed.
Ooh.
So if you did that to a weather prediction system or a defense system or to something that's running the satellite network.
Or the drones, for instance.
Yeah. Or even farming data or financial data.
Yes.
Just changing one digit in a company's spreadsheet somewhere that got fed up into their SEC reporting could cause them to be, you know, wildly profitable or wildly unprofitable.
Oh, dear. Wow. Wow. It's just kind of mind-boggling to think about the implications of that. And as a matter of fact, it would seem to be that that is the kind of goal that has been at work, if you will, politically. And it has been not so much to bring down one party, the Democrats or Republicans or anything else, but it's like this rolling...
uncertainty?
Uncertainty.
Yeah.
Chaos.
Distrust for institutions.
Yeah.
You know, like this, there was an article that came out that I just read before coming in here. I was on, I think, the Fox News service. But anyway, calling the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Incompetence.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can get that working, and it not only at that level, but you're talking about government systems in general being collapsed, what are you going to trust?
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah, and if we lose the trust in the voting system and the electoral system, you know, just by planting that uncertainty, you're planting the seeds that the loser is going to play into the end game of that disruptor by going, well, we really won because the system was hacked. And it doesn't matter who wins or loses.
Exactly.
The loser is going to go, we thought we won.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. How do you beat that kind of a game, you know? What do you do to...
The glory days of the hanging Chad, right?
Yeah.
That's...
Well, you know, voter hacking has been going on since the first voter box. I mean, ballot stuffing, by going back
vote
to
early,
a paper...
Vote early, vote often.
Yeah, you know, going back to a paper system doesn't solve the problem.
No.
And the people with the biggest vested interest in hacking a system are the people who are being elected. So, you know, we can blame the Russians, but I look at it and go, well, the Russians really, they don't care who wins or loses if they can create that chaos.
Yep.
The issue is, who has the real vested interest in affecting an election? Well, the people being elected.
I think also you begin to get kind of an attitude, I have to confess to it, I have myself, of, you know, I can't trust any of these people, you know? It's like if their lips are moving,
part of it all.
If their lips are moving, they're lying, you know, or they're peddling their own particular. And that is, as you said, the saddest part of it, that loss of trust in our institutions and, you know, things like the FBI, which have been, you know, sacrosanct for generations, despite, you know, some dark times under, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, for instance. All right, when we come back, I curiosity question for you. If you're out there, you want to buy a new computer, and there were all these problems with the CPUs, the central processing units, should you hang on and wait for the new ones to come out or just dive into it? We'll get back to that in just a minute. Well, guys, I got to say thank you very much, Kasten Thomas, for being here for the show. It's always fun to have you as part of our crew.
It's always fun to be a part of the crew.
Yep, and Ed Rudell, great job. Both engineering
it's
and...
It's always great, but I do really miss the live where I can interact with our listeners, you know?
Yes, we do too. And we are hoping to get more opportunities to do that in this, our 20th year. We're kind of wrapping up next week. We'll be wrapping up our official celebration of 20 years on WJR, hopefully with a live program. But for those of you listening to us on the Michigan Talk Radio Network, we're glad that you're able to do that as well.
And they can always go to our internetadvisor.net website, on the comments, and send us a question with their problems, and we'll promptly answer it and probably or may even talk about it on the show.
Absolutely. And by the way, usually by Sunday night or Monday, I've got the podcast published up there, and you can download it from our homepage at internetadvisor.net. or you can go to iTunes. And by the way, when you go to iTunes, subscribe to the Internet, the Internet Advisor podcast feed. You got to put the word podcast feed at the end of that, and you'll get the whole thing. Otherwise, you get a, there was a problem, like 2-3 years ago with a broken, something broke in there, and we have a, if you just subscribe to the Internet Advisor, you're going to get bits and pieces of a program up to about 2 years ago in August, and then nothing. Right. So the
and you know what? It was those darn Russians who did it.
Somebody, hey, we were hacked. How do you like that, guys? Oh my, notorious big. Oh shoot, it's went on my mind. We were gonna. Well, oh Ed, you had something you were gonna talk.
No, I was gonna talk about you. Well, you said you had something to talk about Intel processors and when is it safe? Because of the there's a security flaw that not only affects Intel but AMD and most of their chipsets and on modern computers, actually most chipsets that go back 5-10 years, if not even further, are affected. Intel released a patch for that fix, and Microsoft has subsequently released it, but so has Linux and other companies that use and Mac also released a fix.
Yes.
So the question was, when is it safe to buy
a new computer? Yeah. So are we, somebody who's listening to us right now, who's saying, gee, I'm in a market for a new computer for myself, or who knows, graduations are coming up, as a graduation gift. Am I safe buying a new fill-in-the-blank, HP?
Yes, I believe so, because to remind people, integrated on the chips is a set of encryption techniques used for swapping memory in and out of the computer. And all operating systems use this technique. There was a vulnerability discovered. There is nothing in the wild or out there, nothing new out there that they've discovered. And they're calling the vulnerabilities Spectre and Meltdown. And those are just techniques. But there is no viruses, right, that have actually been created that are being distributed?
Well, order to exploit both of these, you have to have local access, or the system already has
physical
to be
access.
Hacked
okay.
in order to take advantage of this. So it's not a huge security hole unless somebody has physical access to your computer or you've already been hacked some other way.
So
a brand new computer would not have been hacked some other way, hopefully.
Well, the operating system vendors, Microsoft, Apple, Linux, and all, are correcting the problem technologically. The problem becomes is that if you're buying that computer now, you're going to need that software that does a software fix. That software fix affects the performance of that computer chip.
Yeah, and that varies. I've heard 7% up to 30%.
Ouch.
That it could possibly affect the computer's performances, depending on what activities the computer's actually performing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But I would, for somebody who's doing, let's say, run-of-the-mill, you know, email, you know, maybe editing some audio or whatever, would they be concerned about that kind of performance hit?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I know when my antivirus kicks off in my computer, it just dogs down. It takes up 60%, if not more, of my computer resources.
Offline, I want to know what malware you're using.
Offline, I'll tell you. I'll tell you right now, it's McAfee.
Okay.
And it's it just chews it up. Where if I had a Defender on the other computers, it doesn't use nearly as much.
Yeah, Malwarebytes is very unobtrusive as well.
Yes,
but
yes.
Some of the McAfee stuff is still using some of the old techniques of doing antivirus to a great degree, and that's causing the performance hit that you're seeing.
Yep.
Okay. So, and Defender is built into Microsoft systems.
Right.
And so Defender has gotten very good with Windows 10. They've done a very, very good job. I wouldn't recommend you use only Defender. I actually have 3 or 4 different anti-malware agents on my office computers, and I've got 2 or 3 on my wife's just because being in the business,
sure.
we can be
targeted.
A target, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and speaking of Defender, Microsoft said that this week, or actually March 1st of 2018, Microsoft has decided to crack down on the growing number of free programs that claim to scan your computer for errors.
Ooh.
And then pressure the PC owners into upgrading and to pay for a version for the
How
cure.
Many calls have we gotten about that kind of thing yet, Ed?
Exactly.
And where is that soundbite of the crowd roaring and cheering?
Yes, we need that.
Gosh, we need that.
Right. Wow, so March 1st, that's coming in. Yeah. Now, will that be, do they say there, is that something that they're going to
it's
make part of the Fed?
Oh, it's part of, yeah, it's automatically with the signature updates starting March 1st.
Oh,
so
they're going to start scanning and removing.
Another good reason, folks, another good reason to stay up to date with your Microsoft systems.
Yeah.
We used to play games with that, I think, you know, saying, well, I'm going to hold off. I don't know if I want this, and it might do some bad. No.
No.
Nowadays.
Well, the other thing is many computers that you purchased from the store are actually provided money by companies like, large antivirus companies like Norton and McAfee and stuff like that. And they'll say, if you pre-install our software, you can reduce the purchase price for the consumer by $10 or $20. So that software is pre-installed and to a benefit to the user usually. Mm-hmm. But then after the first 6 months, it may be, you know, you might have to purchase it. What I do when I purchase new computers is I uninstall the Windows 10 freely provided software. You know, thank you very much, but I'm going to go with Windows Defender, the integrated one from Microsoft.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. And then, as you said, I think, Cassandra, the other thing is Malwarebytes is something that I put on. Now, Malwarebytes, you can pay, what is it? What's the yearly fee, 50?
No, it's a lot less than that.
Is it?
I think that you get promotions. It's like $25, $30 and worth every penny. Because you do get a lot of other features for your web browsing and personal protection and password protection.
It's a good investment, I think, a very good investment to make the yearly one if you want. We've dealt with people before, talking with them about the problem of, you know, this being kind of nagware. Well, this is one of those cases where, you know, give in to the nag.
We've repeated it so many times. If you get hit, I'm sorry, no sympathy.
Yeah.
We told you. We warned you.
Oh. All right, folks. Well, hey, it's been a great week again. Thank you so much. Coming up next week, we're going to be having the Cheapskate on with us. That's right. Rick Broido is going to be back as we wrap up this month of February, our 20th anniversary here on the Internet Advisor at WJR. Thank you again, Ed, for your being producer here, and Kasten for being with us here. We'll look forward to having you folks around with us next week as we wrap things up on our 20th anniversary month of February. Have a great week.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.